Blog Talk Radio.
The link where you smell blood and victory, and we causing a stink. So don't come here trying to get bad, pumping noise,
cause here come the boys.
It's Alex and McNabb and D-Nab. No way you can stop him. He gon' get his, even if he run or stay in the pocket. They too fat to catch him, too small to sack him. And arms too short, no way you can block. And you know Brian Dawkins is wrong, and he's sick with the hits cause he got players coughing the ball. And yo, your line needs to read the defense book. They stand up, we knock him down like a right jab on the left. Oh, it's the replay. Now let's look. These cameras ain't lying right up the gut. Brian Westbrook. Now what is y'all thinking? You better run faster than that, or you look at the back of Tom Pinkston.
I'm Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. You're Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. I'm Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. I'm Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up.
No matter where you take us, still kicking field goals on our own 10-yard line with Dave Aker. The enemy is at war, but their luck's over. Giving hell to your soldiers with Terrell Buckholz. If you down with the visitors, yo, you better run because the 200 levels are old safe. I know why your boy's missing. He got stopped for doing the block, but he got popped. Jimmy Johnson, no, he hitting. Had your QB stretched on the turf cause we know for blitzing. And your coach, I know he crying. His arms sent shut down by Ben Corey Simon. Andy B, make your game play fast. Take a look down in the end zone. You can see score, you gon' have to applaud. We up in Philly, dog, you know what happens to Santa Claus. Yo, our team got heart, y'all can't stand us. But yo, it's all Philadelphia Eagles.
I said, put your hands
our
up.
Our team got heart, y'all can't stand us. But yo, it's all Philadelphia Eagles. Put your hands up.
My Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up. Your Philadelphia Eagles, put your hands up.
Happy holidays. I can't believe another year has gone, guys. Welcome to another edition of Sports Tonight brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters. When you purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club. Tim Baker will be calling, but if he doesn't, give him a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Course, St. Louis University. Guys, the greens are in great shape. Give Tom a call this holiday season, 352-588-2060. You'd like to welcome in our Fed Off the legend, Mr. Don Henderson, and our Atlanta legend, Mr. Roger Henler. Genuine good evening, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Do you believe how fast the year has gone again for this on this program, guys?
Roger.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hard to believe. 52 weeks have passed. And just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a safe, healthy, and happy 2014.
Exactly right. We won't be talking to anybody for a couple of weeks. So you're exactly right. We want to extend all the happiest of holidays to everyone. And we've had a great time doing this show over the last few years. And we'll continue, hopefully, to do so. And got to thank Frank so much for handling the controls for us.
Yes.
He's always the busy man who answers all the phone calls, who gets all the guests, and makes all the arrangements for us to make appearances when we do. Like, we're going to get to the Outback Bowl in a couple of weeks. So, Tommy, we gotta thank Frank for all he does.
Oh, gosh, we can't thank Frank for enough. And I can't thank you enough, Don, you enough, Roger, for coming on every week. And it's like we said before, like sitting in someone's dining room, talking sports, having a good time. You know, all of our guests love that, you know, when they come on that way and that. But, hey, Don, I'll tell you a funny story. I'm sitting here getting ready for the program and getting the dogs ready, right? I come in the den, and the Capone's having my quesadilla.
So well, he's a bright dog, Tommy.
I know. I wasn't bright on the human's point of view up there, but we can't complain.
I just want to follow up with what Don said about Frank. And, you know, we don't get to talk to him as much on the show as we'd like to, but he is definitely a jewel with what he does and puts this whole thing together week after week and is able to coordinate everything. And it's not an easy job, and he is just to be commended as top of the dial, as they say.
Absolutely right. It does a terrific job. And on his behalf, I know that he's got to be very excited this week, more so than any other week that we've done this year, because of that television contract that the Storm are going to be involved in. And I think he's got to be more than a happy man.
Oh, by all means, I second that motion, Don and Roger. We're going to have the commissioner on in a couple minutes here. What the commissioner's done, Jerry Kunz, what he's done for that AFL has been, it's just been remarkable. A contract by CBS and getting the league stronger and a team in Los Angeles important this year. He should be thankful that he's brought the AFL back to respectability and all those major market in LA and in Portland right now. And you know, when you think about the AFL, a sad moment that's happened this past December, right? We should have the show named after Coach Tim Markham, the late Tim Markham of the Storm. He really got the AFL going in the great days of the Tampa Bay Storm up there. And that I was telling Ben in the office this week. I said, Ben, we should have a day for a night for honoring late Coach Markham and put his name up there. What he did for the AFL, bringing the AFL to Tampa from Detroit, winning all those championships, and the guys he had to coach with is George LaFrance, Coach Lawrence Samuels, Brett Dietz, Shane Stafford, just name a few of the quality players that he had on there. And Coach, the late Coach Markham got me involved in the AFL too, and ever since that day, I was his coach. Thank you for getting me involved in the AFL. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy every one of those home games.
And I'll tell
you,
we talked to the
commissioner.
Go ahead, Roger.
The owner, Derek Brooks, was the man of the year. Did you see that announcement?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I had a chance to walk into Derek on Monday, and he said, oh, my God, can I have you autographed now or later what you've done for the Bucks, the Storm, and the AFL, Derek? Thank God you're on our side.
Well, the other thing, Roger, that you probably could talk a little bit more than we could, and we talked to the commissioner early. He sort of set the stage for the television contract coming in and the expansion of the two teams this year. But I know you've been talking to him every time he's been on about what about Atlanta. I mean, they want to see a team back in Atlanta, so that's got to be one of the expansion areas, I would think, as well.
I would think so too, Don, because they have a great facility in Gwinnett, and that's where they were originally, and then they went to the Phillips Arena. That was a mistake, and then they came back. And, excuse me, I still say over and over, when they moved the team, I think it was from Mobile to Atlanta after, you know, they dissolved the league for a year, a couple of years, when Arthur Blank owned it, on the Georgia Force. When they came back, there was just no publicity. I mean, I would have gone to games, but I never knew when the games were. You didn't see anything in the newspaper, didn't see anything on TV, as opposed to what Ben does with the Storm, and also Thomas Goodhines does with the Philadelphia Soul, keeping us abreast of what's going on. It's a great market for arena football. It was not a problem of drawing the fans, that I can assure you. And I think also now, since the Thrashers have moved on, I think that would be a really good fit in this area.
And Tommy, I think the commissioner really set the stage for us anyway when he talked about at great length the new Los Angeles franchise, what was happening there, and the differential between the draft for everybody else and the draft for Los Angeles, and the things that were going to happen in the league. So we sort of had our foot in the door before a lot of other people.
That's for sure. I just tried to get a hold of Jerry three different times, and I tried to get a hold of Ben. I couldn't get him on. But I'll keep trying these guys while we're on the air.
Tell you what, Jerry is probably inundated with national media calls, all these press releases that have gone out.
Sure.
You know, Don, I also mentioned, you see on that one press release, it's got, I forget the name, I'm in the office, but I'm not on the computer. It was a company name, Arena Football League. Did you see that?
I did see that, but I don't recall. I'm not in front of the computer either, and I can't look it up right now. But you're right.
Yeah,
there was
I can't. That's very original. I mean, you know, if you now have a corporation sponsoring an entire league.
Well, that's going to be fantastic. That's what the AFL needs, a corporation sponsoring these guys and get the corporate sponsorship, the corporate dollars in the Arena Football League here. But Don, Roger, and Frank, what about Tampa Bay? He's going to be hosting the national championship game in a couple of years, guys.
Right. That was the next thing that came up this week. You're right, Tommy. And I think it's great for Raymond James Stadium. I think it's great for the Tampa area. We talked about it when the Super Bowl was in the area, whether it was in Jacksonville or whether it was in Tampa. It can't be anything but good for Florida and good for the Florida economy, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity.
And also another thing, the Tampa Bay Times Forum got the Frozen Four in a couple of years, too. That's when my boss is in Indianapolis right now to get his book and memorization again, how you're supposed to get this thing, the building ready for this, but I'm sure he'll do a great job up there. He's up in Indianapolis.
Well, I'll tell you, they did a major story on CBS News tonight centered around the Giant Stadium because, as you know, the last two weeks we've had a lot of snow and a lot of ice and a lot of cold weather. Although this Sunday's going to be 67 degrees. Can you imagine that?
Unbelievable.
Right now it's 27, but it's going to be 67 by Friday and Saturday. And they got to hope that's what happens for the Super Bowl. But they have brought in some special equipment to guarantee that the roads will be very well prepared and that the stadium will be prepared. They've got a snow removal machine. I'm telling you, it looks like it's the length of a football field. And they've got all this special equipment. So that part's been very, very well executed and done. The sad part about it is that $10 bus ride over from the city to Giants Stadium for the Giants or the Jets, actually Met Stadium now, is usually $10. Now it's going to be $51. If you want to park your car, it's usually $30, and now it's going to be $150.
So you
can imagine what the economy is going to receive in New York City, and I'm telling you, I have a granddaughter that lives just over the river, and I have a couple that live in the city, and the prices they're getting for, she wants to move out for a week out of her little apartment, the money that she could get for 1 week now is just unbelievable.
Don, a friend of mine from church, son, just moved to New York with a high-tech company. I hope he's making a lot of money because he has a one-bedroom apartment and his monthly rent is $3,600.
Oh, yeah, that's not unusual. I mean, that really isn't. People across the country, you may not believe it, but, if you want to get an apartment in New York City, and it varies, whether you want to be in Manhattan, do you want to be in lower Manhattan, it's almost impossible now for anybody that, doesn't make a very substantial living Or the other thing you can do, and it's not, you know, not adequate for a one-bedroom, but you have to get two or three partners to go in there with you.
Right.
You know, the girls,
right.
The girls get two or three other girls to rent it, and it costs, you know, costs them each $1,000. But you know, $3,000 a month is not unusual.
Well, you know, we're talking about the Super Bowl, you know, there's not going to be any tailgating.
No.
There's also, if you're you have a limo ride, it's $50 for the limo to get a license, only to drop you off. Okay,
oh,
no waiting around, and that's where that $150 also comes into play, because if you're going to park the car, it's $150. If you come in a limousine and you want him to stay, it's $150 because he's basically, you know, paying for a parking place.
Right.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
It's going to be expensive. I mean, and they're talking now. They did a little piece on one of the radio shows yesterday, the day before, that the prime tickets that are held by, you know, the travel agencies, the scalpers, and the rest, you're talking $2,000 a ticket right now.
Oh. $2,000 a ticket to sit up in snow.
A far cry from Tampa, Tommy, Frank, and Don when we were all there.
Right, because Tampa's gorgeous. I mean, it was like 65, 70 in February. I mean, the thing about that, guys, when you have the Super Bowl is supposed to be a reward for the NFL to showcase the greatest game, the championship game. Why would you go up to New York and play it up there? I mean, here, all these, like I said before, every week it gets these worm stadiums at Tampa, even Atlanta, Carolina, Miami, New Orleans. They should, you know, they should be rotating these where these sites are, not going up into New York to battle the elements up there and trying to get around up there. It's going to be a royal mess.
Tommy,
I mean,
when you spend $1.2 million building a new ballpark, you want some residuals, and you're going to get it by, you know, getting the Super Bowl.
That's exactly right. That's all it is. They may never have it at MetLife Stadium again, what you think, Don?
Oh,
but they're going to have it there because when it cost $1 billion.
Yeah. This is a $1.2 billion they spent to build that place. And you got to remember that the old Giant Stadium wasn't that old. That you're in Atlanta.
No.
You're in Atlanta right now, and you're talking about a stadium that was only 20 years old that the Braves are leaving to go to a brand-new one in the suburbs. 20 years old. I mean, Connie Mack Stadium was built when? In our time. We went
20s.
To Connie Mack Stadium and Shy Park. And,
right.
I mean, all these ballparks were, you know, 50, 60 years old, still very well usable. And now, 20 years, they built a $100 million stadium, and in 20 years, they got to get rid of it.
Well, look at Wrigley Field and Fenway Park. Fenway Park's, what, over 100 years old, right?
Right, right.
Right. I mean,
crazy.
This is absolutely crazy.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Sunday when I was driving down to church, they had the mayor of Atlanta on talking about the Braves' move. And it was a very interesting thing. I wish I could have called in, and I would like to have asked him. It was definitely a political deal, okay? There's no ands, if, buts about it. He said, well, I got my, calls. You know, from constituents say, oh, yeah, well, the Braves got, or the Falcons, we've got to have that new stadium, you know, in town. But, see, then it gets to the demographics on where the fans are coming from. The fans going to the Braves were not coming from the city.
Right.
They're coming from northwest of the city, and that's why it makes sense to now to go to a game, not have to get caught in all that traffic. They'll probably wind up having a light rail, you know, to go out there to meet MARTA somewhere, something like that, and that'll take care of it. But, you know, he was in a no-win situation, and as I mentioned, we talked to Roy Cummins about it. Jeff Schultz said, you know, the mayor rode the wrong horse. He rode the Falcons instead of the Braves. But, you know, I think he's a football fan, probably not a baseball fan, and that was the bottom line. That was it.
Well, the other thing is Frank and Tommy know, and you and I know as well. You know, the Philadelphia Phillies wanted to build their new ballpark downtown, and the greatest thing that ever happened, in my view, was that the Phillies were not able to secure the right property to build
right.
one, because trying to get people in and off the Schuylkill Expressway or get them downtown is a virtual impossibility. And just
right.
to follow up on what you're saying, the greatest thing is in the complex now in South Philadelphia. You know, you got the Wells Fargo, you got the Link, you got Citizens Bank Park. But the most important thing about all of it is you got great roads coming in, great roads going out to get rid of the cars and so forth. So to me, by being denied going downtown, they've improved their situation 110% by being where they are.
Well, absolutely. Exactly. And look at Xfinity and McNally's that's there at the ballpark. I mean, that's now, and then you got Chickie and Pete's on Packer Avenue.
Right.
There's a lot of social locations there where you can enjoy it. You know, Henry mentioned when we were at the sports writers, I don't know whether he mentioned this to you or not, Don. He said the Sixers won out of the Wells Fargo Center, and they want the city to build a new facility for them in the Navy Yard, you know, near the Wells Fargo Center. And if they don't, they're going to go to Cherry Hill.
Well, there again, as you said about Atlanta and suburbia, the great thing about the Phillies not being downtown, their biggest draw is from South Jersey, Delaware,
right,
and the suburbs of Philadelphia. And, but if they had built that stadium and it had been that inconvenient to come in from Delaware, come in from Cherry Hill or any place, you know, in South Jersey, they would have lost all those customers.
You're right. Exactly right.
Why do the Sixers want to build in Cherry Hill, Don? I mean, that's a tough draw anyway. In Cherry Hill,
money,
not gonna
Tommy,
support them.
Money.
Really? Oh my
God!
Yeah,
see, you got to remember they're not owned by Comcast Spectacle anymore.
Right?
Oh, okay. The new ownership. That's right.
The new ownership, and they want their own deal. They have even moved their offices, from what I understand, Don. You know more about it than me. They have moved their offices out of the Wells Fargo Center. And,
you are correct.
Right, and then that's why they said, okay, like, let's get a new facility at the Navy Yard, because there you'd have the same, the Navy Yard is booming. You got Smith, Klein, and French down there now with a huge building. You got the Rothman Institute. I mean, the Navy Yard's not what you and I, you know, grew up with, but the Navy Yard.
The only thing in the Navy Yard now are a bunch of old ships.
That's right.
That's
that
about
we can relate to. You're right.
Yeah, they've got minimum personnel. The ships have not been moved or done anything with in 40 years, and that's all that's there. They're tied to the docks. It's amazing to me how all the equipment that they have there that is absolutely not being used and can't be used. It would have to be completely reconditioned in order to use any of that equipment anymore, and it's just sitting at the docks.
Hey, General,
well, that's right.
And
you remember when the battleship New Jersey was brought out of mothballs back in '68? I had gone on active duty in '67. Oh. I'm sorry. And I tell you, it took a special clearance to get in there, and that's when they brought it back into the fleet, and it was
right
over in Vietnam. You know, during the Vietnam War, and of course now it's not over in Camden. But you remember years ago, we used to hear about they were going to build the new arena over in Cherry Hill.
Right.
And, that goes back years and years. But, who knows? I mean,
well, the biggest
so much
thing, Roger, in our time was that when the Army-Navy game was played, they always had the big sign up, beat Army.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that was when people noticed the Naval Yard more than any other time.
You're exactly right, Roger.
Guys, as long as we're talking about football, we got a guy who's well-versed in football and well-versed in sports completely. Roy Cummings is on the line with us.
Oh, terrific.
Roy,
hey, Roy, how are you?
Great, Roy.
Before
Happy
we forget,
holidays,
Roy,
guys.
If you have to jump off quickly, I know I want to certainly wish you and your family a very, very Merry Christmas, Happy
yes.
New Year, because we won't talk with you after tonight and until after the holidays. So all the best to you and your family.
Well, I appreciate
same
that,
here, Roy.
Yeah, appreciate that, and same to all you guys, too. Hope it's a
Thank
tremendous
you.
Holiday for everybody, and it's been a blast doing this show with you guys. Real interesting It's an interesting approach that you guys take, and I think it's unique, and I think it's certainly got a place.
Well, of course, I'll get to see Roy up here with the 29th, I believe, right? The last game of the year. That's Carolina.
I was just going to say, yeah. Are you going to be in? You going to be in New Orleans that last weekend?
No,
or I'll be, unfortunately.
It shows what age does to you, Roy.
No,
Roy,
no,
let me explain
somewhere.
This to you. I don't know whether you've had a chance to follow the news today, but The gentleman that won the $220 million is with us on the line right here from Atlanta. So there is his plane can pretty much take him anywhere now.
Is that true, Roger? Are you the big winner there?
Hey, listen, Roy, if I was the winner, I would already have bought a major radio station, and all of us would be full-time employees. Let me tell you.
I'd be up for that. I'd be up for that, pal. That'd be some fun there.
I keep on thinking winning the lottery would do the same thing, you know. But Roy, from our family, your family, Merry Christmas, sir. And Roy, I tell you one thing. I was up the Abbey course on yesterday, and those greens are the best I've ever seen in my life, for God's sake. They are fast.
I'm sure, Tommy. You know what? That's good. Fast is good because, as I told you, and our, the guys here on the show may not realize this, you've heard Tommy talk a lot about the Abbey course, and I don't know if you guys have actually ever been to the Abbey course that he talks about in beautiful San Antonio, Florida, and right across the street from St. Leo College. Been named the site for the 2016 Division II Cross Country Championship. So Tommy's going to get knocked out of his golf course there for one day down the road here a little bit.
Holy smokes, that may give him a heart attack.
Yeah, good news to the runners. They like a fast track, obviously. So,
well, let's get back to your football team. A little tough weekend last weekend. I had a tough opponent, and, you know, they were in the game, but just didn't have enough talent to get it done.
Yeah, it all kind of turned on one of those make-or-break kind of plays, and it broke them was that, in my opinion, that third and 12.
Yep.
Blitz,
right.
That was the one that, boy, you look at it and you say, I don't necessarily blame the play. You put guys out there and somebody's supposed to execute, and because the blitz almost worked. I mean, I think it did work. It forced Colin Kaepernick out of the pocket. It forced him almost to the sideline. If you go back and look at that play, Daquan Bowers just about, he got an arm on Kaepernick. He escaped that. And then he's got William Golston and McCoy tracking him down, and he's one step from the sidelines, about ready to go out of bounds, and he finds a guy wide open. There was just a bit of a coverage bust, you know. So I don't think the blitz is really what cost him. I know a lot of people wanted to blame it on that. But, you know, the other thing is, not only did they allow that that completion on the blitz at a spot where a guy was just literally just watching the receiver catch the ball, but you know, the other situation is there were, I might get the number wrong, but like 12 or 13 plays after that where they had an opportunity to get off the field and couldn't do it too. So, you know, it came down to, you know, you would think that at some point the way the Bucs defense has been playing that they would not have allowed a 10-minute, 17-play scoring drive. And even at the end, all they do is give up a field goal. But at that point it was critical, and that's where the game turned. And, you know, if you really look at it objectively, I think you have to say, hey, you know what? Against a very tough team, the Bucs were right in it when they wanted to be in the fourth quarter of a position to win, and it was a young offense. They couldn't quite pull it off, and the defense got hung out there for a while. And you know, I don't think that's going to happen consistently. But you know, it's a tough deal. It's a tough one to swallow for these guys. I think a victory would have assured Greg Schiano being back with this team. Now I'm not so sure. I still think he will be back. I'm leaning that way, but it goes from being, you know, a 70-30 or maybe even 80-20 proposition if they win to what it is now, which is, you know, probably 55. I wouldn't even say it's 60-40. I don't think it's that good. So, you know, he's got to perform these last couple of weeks because, you know, there's going to be candidates out there. Lovie Smith is out there, and, you know, you're going to have a shot at who knows, maybe a Jason Garrett, somebody like that. You know, there's a lot of people out there that coach football teams, and, you know, we'll see what happens down the road.
We're going through exactly the same thing here. You know, the New York papers are all filled. It's Tom Coughlin, who still has a year remaining on his contract. Is he going to continue? And, of course, Rex has been all over the papers the last 2 days. Had a big press conference saying he's the guy to continue with the Jets. And so it's very interesting as we look around the league at the teams we see on a regular basis. We don't know much about what happens to teams outside our area. But, you know, there's got a lot of coaching speculation right now, Roy.
Well, you're right. And you know what? I think one of the things that's going to happen here in Tampa, at least, I don't know if New York looks at it this way, but if I'm the Glazer family and I'm you know, a little uncertain as to where I'm headed with my coach, one of the things I'm doing is I'm looking at who becomes available, too. You know, a year ago, you know, if you're in a position a year ago, the same one that you're in now, and all of a sudden Andy Reid came open, if I'm an owner, I'm jumping on that, because I don't think Andy Reid did anything wrong in Philadelphia. You know, I'm not sure he always had the, you know, the proper personnel to win at a high level there. But, you know, I thought that's a pretty good coach. And if Tom Coughlin is still interested in coaching and he's out there, you're the Buccaneers and you think you got a team that's just about, you know, just about Super Bowl ready, at least on one side of the ball, and all you've got is a young quarterback and you've got one of his old coaches in Mike Sullivan running your offense, why wouldn't you think about bringing that guy in?
Well, the only problem with
they're
72 years old. That's the thing that, you know, has really been hampering him over the last year and a half now. Everybody keeps, every time they lose a game, you know, it's his age. And I think there's one thing you can look at, what happened with him with Carolina. And then when they start to go into the doldrums in Carolina, he couldn't pull them out. And when the Giants started to go into the doldrums this year, he has not been able to pull them out. And that coupled with his age, I don't think he's going to coach again if he leaves the Giants.
Well, you may be right.
I don't think he will either. I agree with Don.
You guys may be right, but again, what I'm saying is that if you're the Glazers, I think you have to look at it. And
right.
That's why I'm not sure that, you know, I think that plays into the Greg Schiano situation. If you look at the landscape and you say, look, there's nobody out there that is going to be better, significantly better, well, then you move on with the guy you've got. But if you look at it and say, hey, wait a minute, you know, I got a choice. I could get Rex Ryan. I can get Lovie Smith. I could get Gary Kubiak, who's done it before. You know, if Tom Coughlin, you know, if he really is interested in sticking around for a few more years, you know, maybe that works out for you. I think it's something you have to do if you're a responsible owner and you're not completely sold on the guy you've got. Now,
right.
By the same token, as I've said a couple of times, when you look at Greg Schiano and what he's done for this football team and you look at what his objectives were when he first got here, which was change the culture, he did that. And then, you know, he had an offense that last year that seemed like it was there, but that thing blew up in everybody's face, and partially or largely because of the quarterback situation. But, you know, he had a defense that couldn't defend the pass, and now they lead the league in interceptions. He had a defense that couldn't get after the passer, and now it's got 33 sacks for the first time since 2005. And, you know, you're starting to see progress on that side of the ball. And I think, again, if you look at it objectively, you can knock him certainly for the record, but yeah, you have to look at, you know, Pro Bowlers are starting to develop on this football team under his watch. Gerald McCoy is probably headed to his second Pro Bowl under Greg Schiano's watch. Levante David's probably headed to his first. I'm not sure if anybody else gets there from this team, but they've got candidates. And, you know, some of these young kids are starting to turn into pretty good, effective football players. So, you know, let's see how it all shakes out. Certainly the next couple of weeks are going to determine a lot about where this team's headed.
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, I was at the Falcons-Redskins game Sunday, and one of your brethren, who I've known and you've known for a long time, I know Don, Mark Maskey of the Washington Post. And I can remember Mark when he was the beat writer for the Post covering the Orioles in the 80s. And don't you agree that here's a guy that never ages? And I said, that's leading me to my conversation. And I said, you know, Mark, I said, you've got great genes. You haven't aged in all the years that I've met you, I've known you. And he said, I aged 20 years this past week because of all the controversy with Shanahan.
And
he cut the media off because they were after I was standing there after the game, you know, at the press conference, and he cut them right off because he said, thank you very much, gentlemen, and walked away when they wanted to build on it. Then I read an article in the paper, I guess, yesterday that it is Monday press conference. He is talking about Gary Kubiak. So they think that Shanahan may stay. and his son goes as the offensive coordinator, and he brings Kubiak back, which I believe was his offensive coordinator when he was with Denver.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know what? That's something that I think could happen in Tampa, too, is, you know, again, Greg Schiano is a defensive-oriented coach, and I think his defense has made some strides this year. In fact, some big ones. And I think they've got that side of the ball settled, at least for now. But maybe what happens is the offensive coordinator we thought was a keeper a year ago, or some people did. I shouldn't say we, but some people did, thought he was a keeper a year ago when they had the ninth-best offense. Now it's down to 32nd in the league. I believe that's a spot where you got to look and say, look, is this the guy? You know, can we do better? And, you know, I don't think Mike Sullivan really pushes the kind of scheme that Mark Dominic and the Buccaneers want. I know they want to run the ball. That's one thing. But in terms of the way he works the passing game, I don't think that he runs the scheme that they're looking for, which is more of kind of a West Coast-type scheme with the run mixed in. So maybe they're looking for somebody else.
You touched on the exact same thing that's been repeated and reiterated in New York. Right. You know, that Rex has a defense playing great football. I mean, they really are. You know, they lose, but they lose because of the offense. And, you know, should he get a new offensive coordinator? What should he do on that side of the ball? Just exactly as you're saying. And with the Giants, the same thing. Look what's happened to Eli this year, right? He has more interceptions than anybody in the league. And it's because the offense just hasn't been able to come together. And do they need a new offensive coordinator and keep Tom? So it's the same old question.
And Don Rex brought in a new one this year when he brought Marty Morningwig in to replace Sperano.
Exactly. Well,
yep,
Sperano,
great point.
Nobody thought Sperano was going to be. I mean, there's a guy had no experience doing what he was
none,
doing. I mean,
none.
That was the poorest choice he could have ever made.
Yeah, it's a dilemma. And it's the funny thing about football is it seems like every head coach is really a specialist on one side of the ball, not all sides. And, you know, what ends up happening then is the other side of the ball tends to suffer. You know, we saw it with Tony Dungy here in Tampa when he had Monty Kiffin running his defense for him. You know, they were tremendous on that side of the ball. On offense, they were horrible. And it took for you could never find a coordinator. He finally went to Indianapolis where they had a coordinator and you know, in place. And, you know, and that worked out for him. So it's one of those tough balancing acts, and I think one of the key things that a guy who's really solid on one side of the ball is Greg Schiano is with defense. You've got to find somebody on the offensive side of the ball who's really good and knows what he's doing and probably has done it before, and insert that guy and then leave that piece of it alone. Let those guys do what they do and hope for the best.
Well, as Phil Simms said the other night on HBO, you know, people don't realize this game is not the same game it was 10 years ago. All they do is throw the ball up and down the field. The defense is limited. So if you have a Rex Ryan who has been able to control the defense to a degree, whether you like to use his father's, you know, blitz tactics or what you like to do, he's been able to maximize the defense, but you can't overcome it when you have no offense. And as Simms said, this game is a quarterback game. You pass the ball, you catch the ball, you score points. You don't score points, you don't win.
Yeah, you're right, and that's what you know. There's been questions here in Tampa about is Mike Glennon, you know, being allowed to test his skills and abilities. You know, they're being a little bit careful with him. You know, don't lose the game, manage it type thing. You know, I think he's got the ability to do a little bit more than what he's been asked to do. But you know, how much of it is the weapons around him too? You know, these are the things that the general manager and the owners have to evaluate at the end of the year and decide, you know, do we have the pieces in place and we just, you know, some of them were hurt this year and a couple didn't quite perform properly, or, you know, is it that we don't have the proper pieces? If that's the case, well, then you got to go on big change.
You know, Roy, on Sirius NFL Radio today, they were talking about the possible availability of Jay Cutler. As a free agent, if the Bears decide they don't want to pay the $100 million deal that most of these number one quarterbacks are getting, and just think of the teams that would probably really be interested in Jay Cutler being their quarterback.
Well, I think from a talent perspective, a lot of teams would be. My problem with Jay Cutler is what everybody's problem with Jay Cutler is the attitude. And, you know, the kind of aloofness that seems to to poison the locker room. You know, he's right. never the most popular guy in the room. And, you know, your quarterback has to probably, I mean, let's face it, what you got, Don was just saying about situation, you know, what Phil Simms said, that it's a quarterback-driven league.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's got to be your star. He's got to be your leader. And everybody's got to love that guy and rally around him and respect him. And, you know, if they don't love you and respect you, they're not going to play hard for you necessarily. And I think that's been part of the problem with Cutler, wherever he's gone. I think that's why Denver let him go. I think it's why the Bears have struggled at times with him. You know, I think the Bears have been good enough to win a lot more than they have. And I'm not saying that Jay Cutler is the reason they haven't done that completely. But, you know, you do wonder, if the guy's so good, how come that's, you know, why isn't that one of the top 10 offenses in the league? It's not.
Oh, that's a great point, Roy. I think the year that Gerald McCoy's having, he's going to be, you know, all-pro this year again, and also Levante David. But I think Darrell Revis is finally healthy for that defense, and it's paying off dividends. And the Buccaneers should have won that football game on Sunday. Why in the heck did the guy run the ball out and do that darn reverse? I heard your question on the post-game, and Coach said it was playing. How can you play in, you know, when you run the ball out 10 yards in the end zone? That was a turning point in the whole game. When I saw that bonehead play, I just dropped the pencil and I walked away from my seat in disgust.
Yeah, well, what happened there, guys, is much like a quarterback who goes to the line of scrimmage with, you know, an option to, you know, if he sees a certain alignment defensively, he's got the option to change the play. The return man on the kickoff return on that play was given the option that they ran a play that in which the return man, and I don't know how often this play is in. My guess is it's probably in maybe not that much.
Right.
But in this case, the play was in which the return man had the option of running this handoff. I think the reverse is coming anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to the return man with the ball in his hands to read the defense properly. And if he sees it, in a certain way, you run the handoff. Well, two things happened. First of all, he saw something that the coaching staff didn't. He thought he saw the defense align in a way that made the handoff a plausible option.
Mm.
And the coaches said that didn't happen. That was mistake number one. Mistake number two was the recipient of the handoff never secured the ball. Maybe he knew that, hey, I'm just running a dummy route here at this point because that option isn't there, and didn't expect it. But the bottom line is the guy fell, dropped the ball, and he got picked up and run in the end zone. So, you know, the question you have to ask of the coaches, I think, in that case is, you know, why would you even put that option in there and let a rookie like Eric Page, you know, why would you take the chance on him screwing it up and reading it wrong at a crucial point in that play? The other thing is if, you know, if you read it right and you see it, that, well, all of a sudden we're all talking about that play. It's like
right.
anything else in football in particular. You know, if you – football gets this more than any other sport. We seldom question a pitcher, for example, whose best pitch is a slider throwing a home run ball if you threw a fastball, you know,
right.
or even threw a curve or something like that. But any time a football coach, the play doesn't work, we automatically second guess and say, well, that was a stupid play. You know, but if it works, we're praising it. And, you know, it's just that's the way of the world. But in this case, you know, you do question, you know, well, why did you even put it in? And I think the reason is, well, hey, if they see something and it's read right, we got a chance to break it here. And, you know, if we get a 45 or 50 or 60-yard return out of it, and, you know, we're 6 points down with the ball at the opponent's, you know, 45-yard line, all of a sudden we're back in it here. And
Roy, I'm a great believer in percentages. We talked about this early in the season, you know, when they set a rookie quarterback up that had never played before, and they tried to run a ball out of the end zone 9 yards deep, and they wound up on a 12-yard line and got
yep.
themselves killed. To me, I mean, how many balls do you see that are kicked to the 9 yards into the end zone
right.
that turn up over the 20-yard line? I mean, if you look the whole season, every game that you've seen, how many balls that are kicked to the base of the end zone that have run down past the 20?
Well, I can think of one in Alabama-Auburn game that worked out pretty well.
Damn,
but
that's not
that,
the national football league.
Yeah, but other than that, you don't see it much at all. In fact, I mean, let's face it, you know, the whole situation with the kick return game now is completely different. You know, you got to run in most cases 5, 8, 9, 10 yards, you know, just to make something happen at all.
Right.
Before you even, you know, you got to have a 25-30 yard return just to get to the 20. So,
right.
You know, to me, the percentages are totally against any kind of return working in your favor. And
well,
really
you look at the Detroit game, though. You look at the Detroit game, but where did he kick the ball? He kicked the ball to the goal line, and he ran it 35 yards out and gave his team a chance to win the ball game with a 62-yard field goal. He didn't kick.
Yeah.
He didn't catch it 9 yards in the end zone.
Right.
He caught it
at the
goal line or a yard outside the goal line.
Yeah, no, I hear you, and I agree. I agree. I mean, in my opinion, 9 yards back, look, it's not where you want to be, but, you know, take the ball at the 20 and see what you can do. You just had a lot of success running a no-huddle scheme. That's what you're going to be in, obviously, with 4.5 minutes to play in a game where you're down by 2 scores. You're going to have to get 2. So
right.
You're going to be in a no-huddle situation again. I'm with you guys. I totally agree.
Great.
But, you know, hey, unfortunately, I don't make the $3 million the coach does. To make those other decisions.
None of us do.
None of us do. But how about Brad? You know, I think the Glennon looks like a younger Brad Johnson.
What do you think about that?
I'll
tell you what, Tommy. I agree 100%. I think he's just that kind of quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people, you know, that people they'll yawn over that thought. But to me, that Brad Johnson was a winning quarterback in this league.
Right.
And he was smart. He knew how to take checkdowns. He knew how to throw the ball away when he had to. He could make a big play when he had to. And I agree. I think that is the guy I think of right now when I see Mike Glennon play. The first guy that comes into mind, I think the best description is he's like Brad Johnson, only much younger. And, you know, that means he's got a chance to be even better. And if that's the case, well, then he's probably going to help some team win a Super Bowl sometime, because I think he does what NFL quarterbacks need to do, which is, again, stand in the pocket, make throws, escape when he has the option, and for the most part, he makes very sound decisions.
You talk about sound decisions, and I go back to so many of the games that I've seen this year so far, but none in comparison to the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, they took 19 seconds off the clock in a series when they're ahead. 23-0. I mean, and they have the second or third highest paid quarterback in the National Football League,
right.
and an administrative staff that makes all kinds of money in a stadium that's unbelievable, and they got the dumbest bunch of guys I've ever seen in my life.
I certainly can't disagree with you guys. I believe the same thing. I don't understand why Tony Romo continued, you know, why he got the contract he got. I guess part of it is, you know, it's, as we've been saying, it's an NFL, it's a quarterback-driven league. You got to pay somebody. You got to spend $128 million, you know, on players. You got to spend it somewhere. So maybe they thought that, he was gonna change. But let's face it. Tony Romo gets into December and something happens. I don't know. You know,
two interceptions in 2 minutes. That's pretty hard to do. You and I couldn't get two interceptions in 2 minutes.
On two
he gets, he, you know what it is? He gets the stats, but as you were saying, with Brad Johnson, he's not Romo's not a guy to control the game.
No.
That's the problem.
You want
somebody that can control the game. And he's out there, and I thought the post game when Garrett said that was a running play, and he audibled it, to a pass.
It was a run play, and he audibled to the pass, and he didn't execute the pass. You know, you're going to make that audible. You darn well better make sure you execute it. You're right. Look, I don't get the Tony Romo thing. I think he's an adequate quarterback.
Right, exactly.
If I'm in charge of a football team, I'm not paying an adequate quarterback the money he's getting.
No.
And I'm looking for somebody else. And you know, the option has been there for the Cowboys many times to get somebody else, and they've passed on it. And you know what? There's a reason they haven't made the playoffs in, what, 17 years or haven't won a playoff game in 17 or whatever
one,
that
one
is.
Time. One
time. One time, yeah.
Okay, one time. So, you know, there it is. There's a reason.
I mean, all he had to do was kneel down. I mean, they didn't have to run a play. They could have just kneeled down three times, let the clock run. There's no way they could have lost.
You're preaching to the choir. I don't get it. I don't get it. And, you know, somebody's going to probably end up losing a job over it, but the problem is the problem stays. Because the problem is the owner.
I believe what you're saying is true because Kurt Warner, you know, he bailed everybody out really after the game. I don't know whether you saw it or not. He bailed everybody out because he said exactly what you're saying right now. Well, when you look at that defense, that's a perfect defense to throw. No defense is a perfect defense to throw when you can kneel down and end a game.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Fellas, it made us Eagles fans very happy.
Yes, I was just going to say that, Roger.
Right. Hey, you know, it's amazing how the Eagles have stayed alive thanks to everybody else's boneheaded mistakes, you know, and primarily in Washington and Dallas. I mean,
not only
right,
that, they go into Minnesota that's so shorthanded. You know, how can they be beaten like that in Minnesota by a team that has four of their best players on the bench?
That was a trap game, and they got trapped.
Yep,
it was, exactly.
Right.
Then they play your Bears at in Philadelphia Sunday night, so that's going to be an interesting contest up there. And I, you know, this hopefully, you know, the Eagles will prevail and they beat the Cowboys to win the NFC East up there. And I hope the Bears make the playoffs somehow, somewhere. And I'd be, because I watch it always on WG, and they always had the Bears in the locker room, and they – You know, when you think of Chicago Bears, guys, you think of Chicago Bears. I think it's America's team, also.
Well, gotta disagree with you there, Tommy. I don't quite get that. I being from Chicago, they're not good enough to be America's team. America doesn't want to be associated with a team that loses that much.
Yeah, they're too up. They're too up and down. But let me ask you this, Roy, because you know I don't know the guy. I've never even talked to him, but. How in the world could he have a team that is this organized with the talent he has in Detroit? I watch him every week. I watch their games, and I say, hell, it is. And Monday night was a perfect example. I mean,
exactly.
How in the world could a team with that kind of talent, and you look up at the end of the game, and he's lost it?
By a field goal kicker, Don, 62-yard
field
goal.
That, I mean, you look at the series of plays they run, the offside penalties, the – Right. I mean, three more interceptions. Yeah, I mean, you got a quarterback who throws the ball well, but I mean, he throws it all over the field. And,
which game is this guy? Which game?
Detroit.
The Lions.
Well, you know, look. I'll tell you what. That's another situation where I think, you know, it's so much is put on the quarterbacks in these games, and you know, I'll say this. Detroit did an incredible job limiting Baltimore to, what, 4, 5, 6 field goals? I mean, field goals all night
field
long.
Goals.
Six all
field
goals.
Six field goals. And, you know, when you've done that, you know, you just need a player or two from the offensive side of the ball to make it work. And Stafford couldn't get it done. I mean, just like he had a Romo-like fourth quarter. He threw two horrible interceptions at the worst possible time. You just can't do it.
And not only that, you get unnecessary roughness, unsportsmanlike contact, motion penalties. I mean, the most undisciplined team, if you look down the sheet every week at the plays and say, how in the world can they do this week after week after week? Somebody's got to be responsible. And the coach gets on a post-game show Monday night and said, well, you know, yes, this is a disappointing loss, and we don't have our fate in our own hands now. We just have to go out and win the next two games. But we didn't play that badly.
I see what he says when he says he doesn't play that badly because, again, like I just said, you know, you've got a situation there where, you know, they did limit him to 5 field goals. So, you know, that's one thing. But at the same time, you know, you gotta produce on offense. And, I mean, Calvin Johnson looked horrible and Stafford looked even worse. They really didn't run the ball very effectively. So, you know, on that side of the ball, they clearly didn't get things done.
Well, you know, you're right there. But the thing is that Tommy and, well, all the four of us, I mean, we lived through the Eagles. And how many times did we say, Walters holding, Walters holding.
Woody Peoples holding.
It had to be. Well, Woody Peoples, I'll never forget. It was one of the great stories of all time. Dick Vermeil. I'm with him on a plane. We're going to Chicago. And Dick Vermeil said, you know what happened, Donnie? I said, no, I don't know what happened. He said, well, I'll tell you. He said, we practiced all week for the four-man defense against the team. And Woody Peoples, a 13-year veteran. And he said they went to a 3-4, and he didn't know who the hell the blocker.
Oh, no.
Oh, but wasn't holding number 69 Woody Peoples. Well, Don and everybody, I remember Doug Deacon, I told a story to Roy, I told it to you guys, right? I'm in a local establishment up in northeastern Ohio, and I see Doug Deacon in there. So I said, oh, no, here we go. I said, you know, I was a fan. I said, Doug, I hope I don't see this on Sunday. I drop a hanky. I hope I don't see this for you on Sunday. You remember? It was a napkin. So you better not do that on Sunday afternoon with a hanky going down there.
Well, Roy, how about the last two games now? Let's get back on the track of the team that we're following here with the Bucks.
Yes.
And let's analyze these last two games and what they mean.
Well, this one this week is obviously a very winnable game against a beatable team. And you guys have heard me say it 1,000 times. If you do what you're supposed to do, win the games you're supposed to win and beat the teams you should beat, you're usually going to be in a pretty good spot. So my feeling is if they can go to St. Louis and win this game, beat this team, I think Greg Schiano is going to be in solid shape, and we're probably going to start feeling better about where the Bucks are going into 2014. If they lose it, you look at it and say it's another lost opportunity. You got to, you know, certainly you got to break it down and see how they lost it. But you know, it's an opportunity lost, and I think that's a tough one. It's a tough game for them because the offensive line has clearly been very inconsistent, struggling. Obviously, they got here now they got Robert Quinn coming at them, and Long, Jake, you know, the other kid on the other side, two very very good pass rushers, and that's an issue. For a team that's been struggling up front. Third down is a horrible. I just got done putting to bed a story about the problems the Bucks have had on third down. Do you guys realize they've only completed 19.5% of their third downs over the course of the last six games?
Oh, my.
It's just ridiculous. I mean, they really are struggling. They've had two games in the last three where they've completed just one of 10 third downs. You can't win football games that way. And, you know, that's got to be corrected, or they're not going to have a chance in either one of these games.
Let me ask you this. The heart and soul of that problem is not third down. The problem is first down. You cannot consistently go second down and 9,
right,
or second down and 10 or 11. You have to have – the first down is the key. Forget the third down, because you're never going to make third downs consistently if you have to make it 8 and 9 yards every time.
No, even the best teams in the league are at, you know, 38%. Some are at 40, but nobody's doing 50% and 60% on third down. But you're right, and the Bucks are I think they're 20th, 28th in the league in first down percentage, 4.7 yards, which is not. It sounds okay, but it's not. And that's clearly the problem because they faced so many third and longs. And when you're facing, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but I think. Of the last 35 first downs, I think 26 of them have been third and 7 or longer. You can't win football games in those situations.
No way.
Hey, Roy, well, what about the Browns? How about the Browns complete. Finish up there against New England? I mean, Don's buddy, Norv Turner, he's trying to run an Browns and offense up there, but that's a crazy situation in Cleveland right now.
Well, the situation in Cleveland's been crazy for 50 years, as far as I can tell. It's no different. I don't know. There's certain. It's one of the reasons that if people will scream and yell. Some people will, not everybody. But it's one of the reasons if the Buccaneers keep Greg Schiano around, I don't have a problem with it because I honestly believe that one of the biggest problems that teams have in this league is they're all too anxious to make changes, and they don't,
right.
And they make change for change's sake. Look, I understand the objective is to win. Clearly, the objective is to win. But if you bring in a coach and he decides that I'm going to start everything all over again and you don't give him at least 3 years, if not 5 years, to really install a program that's his program, get his players in there and everything else. And you know, football is not like any – it's no different than any other sport. if you've got a certain kind of scheme that you run or a system that you have, you want certain kind of players, and you know, you've got to get those players in there. And Cleveland has never allowed anybody to just, you know, stay in there long enough to really establish his game plan, so to speak, for the franchise. And you know, they had their guy, Belichick, and it wasn't good enough. And they said, all right, that's enough of that. Well, boy, what a stupid move that was.
Exactly.
And we just keep seeing team after team after team make the same stupid move. I'm not happy with what Peck did with Gary Kubiak. He deserved it. I mean, look at, you know, here's another one. Look at Carolina and John Fox. Everybody's all excited about Carolina this year. But a year ago, they were all questioning Ron Rivera. And, well, you know, I can understand that. But what they should have been questioning is, why the hell did they let John Fox go? The guy's a big dog. You know?
And they didn't get any support that last year, Roy, at Carolina. They didn't give John any support that last year in his contract.
No, I know. And they clearly wanted to make a move. They felt that, you know, he's kind of, his time was up. And look, I see the point. I don't understand it.
I didn't see where they're
coming from. But again, I just think that all you do when you make those changes is you just put your franchise back. And, you know, anytime you make a coaching change, I don't care who you bring in, you have taken a step back. And it doesn't matter that some coaches step in the first year and they happen to win. That's probably just luck of the draw. Just like John's rookie team, the team Rich McKay built, and he just happened to get a couple of pieces that the other guys didn't have, and they got a couple of matchups that the other guys didn't get, and lo and behold, they win a Super Bowl. And, you know, and that gave him plenty of time. And over time, he proved that, you know, his system really didn't work very well. He's good enough to, you know, maybe be in it this year, but he's probably going to be out of it next year in a very inconsistent run. And I just think that I just don't think there's enough time devoted to just trying to maintain consistency with these things. I think you're better off, you know, if you believe in a guy 1 year, why do you give up on him 2 years later? I just think it's just I don't think the results match the justify the decision in most cases.
Great point, because that's why I think the Bucs should keep Greg Schiano. He started something good on this defense. He's got a Brad Johnson like a quarterback, and he's got when Doug Martin comes back, he's got his running back right there, and the offensive line comes back there, and then he's got Connor Barth, the great field goal kicker. The pieces are there. Buccaneer fans, be patient. Schiano will be back next year, and this team's going to be better off right now going through the tough year this year. Because Roy and everybody, every team goes through a tough year. Look at Chuck Noll and the Steelers, that 1-13 record. What did he do that following year in the playoffs and almost the Super Bowl?
Well, you're right. Yeah. And you know, that's how it should be. I mean, you'd love to see a guy stick around for a long time. You know,
sure.
Tom Coughlin, you know, I mean, how many times did they want to fire Tom Coughlin up there in New York? He ended up winning them, you know, a couple of Super Bowls. So you're not going to win every year in this league. A lot of things have to happen just right if you want that to work. So, we'll see. You know, I mean, Greg Schiano, as I said before, I think it's about a 55-45 split right now, whether he comes back. I think I think he's got a shot, but he's got some work to do in these last two games. His big opportunity to secure things was last week, and you know, he was in a position, but couldn't quite finish it off.
And Roy, the other intangible about that is you talk about 1 year to the next. 1 year the Giants have gone with almost no injuries, and this year they've had a ton of injuries. So injuries play such a big part now because of the salary cap. The people that you could say, well, the next guy's got to step up. But the next guy's not anywhere near as good as the first guy because they don't pay him any money. He's sitting back there with very little money, and you get five guys hurt, and there's no way that you could feel a team that's going to be as competitive as it was the first day of the season.
I think one of the biggest jokes you hear around this league is, and I don't mean, you know, a laugh-out-loud kind of, you know, joke, but one of the things that just makes me laugh is the people who talk about, well, this team or that team doesn't have any depth. No team has depth. You can't have depth. The system's not created to have depth. If you have, if you can't pay your backup quarterback $14 million, You can't do it. You can't pay him $8 million. The system's set up to pay him virtually a minimum wage, maybe $2-3 million tops, and that's it.
Right.
So if your starter goes down, what do you think you're going to have behind him? You're not going to have some guy who won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. You're going to have either some, you know, career backup like Dan Orlovsky or somebody who's on his way out of the league.
You're going to have Flynn. You're going to have Flynn that played for five teams so far.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's
exactly.
And it's really no, and it's no different at the other key positions, which are tight end, running back, wide receiver, defensive end, linebacker, safety, cornerback. You know, the only place you could have really adequate depth is if you get lucky and happen to, you know, catch somebody else's mistake and you pick up some former first or second round draft pick who's a guard or a tackle, you know, and you just happen to be out there and somebody gave up on the guy and he's still got some ability and, you know, somehow it works out for you. But, you know, if you lose your rush end, you know, who you're counting on to get 12 sacks, the guy coming in is probably going to get three. And that's just the way it is. So,
and you better be lucky enough to have a number one center and a number one left tackle, or you're gonna find yourself
yep,
on your
right.
head.
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And again, those are the positions where the money's spent, and usually, you know, 70% of your salary cap goes to those key players, those starting positions, and the rest is, you know, the rest of the guys, they're either aging veterans who are about to leave the league, or they're young kids. Just trying to make their way in it because that's how it's done. That's how it's going to work for everybody.
I'll tell you, Roy, early in Andy Reid's career with the Eagles, he made draft picks that everybody, but a lot of people were questioning. And it was the quarterback position. And it was because you had Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor there. You also had Al Harris. Of course, that Al went to Green Bay. But he drafted Sheldon Brown and Lito Shepard. And everybody said, why are you drafting them so high when you've got two tremendous corners? But it was smart, just like you're saying with depth. Here, he was planning for the future, even though the future might have been 3-4 years down the road, mm-hmm. you know, which it was. But that way he had younger players that were not getting the big bucks, but they could be developed, and then they both developed into really terrific quarterbacks.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to be able – as a general manager now, you have to look – you can't be worried so much about this year. You have to think 3 years down the road. You have to look at your contract, say, all right, who's going to be up? How old is this guy going to be? You know, right now, for example, I think the Buccaneers – we were talking about it today over $1. You know, what do we think their first-round pick is going to be? And right now, as we sit here today, I think it'll be one of three things. It'll either be a defensive end, an offensive lineman, or a wide receiver. And a lot of people say, well, why wide receiver? You got Vincent Jackson, you got Mike Williams, he'll be coming back. And I'll say, because you don't know how much longer Vincent Jackson is going to play. The man turns 31. Once you hit 30 in this league, it's usually, you know, all downhill after that. And the guy can't run after the catch now. So, you know, I think receiver is an option. Defensive end, they absolutely have to have. They drafted a left tackle, even though Donald Penn is still getting paid a lot of money. You couldn't knock him because, you know, how much longer is Penn going to play? You have to be prepared for what happens 2 years down the road sometimes. You can't always think about, well, this is what I need today. That's why
right.
that whole, you know, cliche about the best player available. Most teams do it that way because, you know, yeah, we got three cornerbacks, but if that's the best player on the board, I'm taking the cornerback because it's a tough position to learn, and 2 years from now, I probably won't have three starting cornerbacks. I'll probably have one, and this guy will step in.
You know what,
great
Roy?
Point.
You bring up a great
hey, Leo.
Starting. Yeah, how you doing? You bring up a great starting point. When do we start pointing the finger back at Mark Dominic? He obviously blew the pick with Josh Freeman.
No, he didn't.
Oh yeah.
What did he blow?
First round.
What
pick.
Did he blow? Wait a minute, slow down, Leo. He had the best season of a quarterback in franchise history last year. That ain't blowing the pick. That ain't blowing the pick. He had a 10-win season in his second year in the league. That ain't blowing the pick.
Yeah,
something happened to that kid over the during the course of the offseason. The coach no longer believed in him, and he moved on. He didn't blow the pick.
Roy,
yeah,
I got to disagree
not
with you on
pick.
That. You can't take a first rounder and expect to get 2 years out of him. You got
to
get 5, 6, 7 years out of him.
They didn't expect to get 2 years out. They expected to get 10 years out of him.
Exactly.
And you know what? They might have. But the, the coach now decided he wanted somebody else. When you, this is what I'm talking about. Lee, I don't know if you were on the phone here just a few minutes ago. When you change coaches, you take steps backwards. If the Bucks change coaches, listen, if the Bucks change coaches this week, this year, we don't know. There's no guarantee Gerald McCoy and Levante David will be here next year.
I got to agree with you. If I'm the head coach or somebody's coming in, he doesn't want Glennon. He wants his guy. And, again, that's going to happen. I heard you about Cleveland. You're exactly right. You got to build continuity. That's why I think you got to bring Shiano back. Let's see what can happen.
Well, I agree with you there, Leo. But as far as Dominic goes, look, I support Mark Dominic. I think, because here's the thing. He spent 3 years with a coach who wasn't ready to coach in the NFL. And he was given an order when he took over this franchise. By the way, he didn't hire that coach. The owners did. That's number one. So you can't knock him for Raheem Morris. But he was also given an order when Raheem Morris and he took over the franchise to gut the franchise of all veterans, all aging players, and start rebuilding through the draft. Well, the average age of a player, the average length of players stays in this league is 4 years. So 2009 draft, the fact that most of those players are no longer in the league is not, shouldn't be a surprise. But three of them are, and they were starters. Josh Freeman started the season as a starting quarterback. E.J. Figure started the season as a starting cornerback in Washington. You know, there's starting players out of that draft that are still in the league. They just don't happen to be Buccaneers right now. And look at his other drafts. You know, he didn't blow the McCoy pick. I don't think he blew the Doug Martin pick. He didn't blow the Levante David pick. I don't think he's blown the Mark Barron pick. I mean, and there's other – Keith Tandy is helping his football team win games. That's not a bad pick. Everybody wants to knock the 2009 draft. Okay, go show me the San Diego Chargers 2009 draft. Show me how many players are left from that team. Seattle, same thing.
Roy, with that being said, this is still a crapshoot, isn't it, when you talk about the draft? I mean,
always.
If Clowney is still on the board, the Bucs got to take him, whether they want to or not, just because of what he possibly could do. It's more potential than anything else, isn't it?
I totally agree with you. Absolutely, yeah. But you know what? As you know, Leo, and I think we all know, what's today, December 18th? The draft is what, April 28th or something? I don't know. Is it May now? I don't know when it is. But
April 22nd.
Okay, count up the month. We're 5 months away, guys.
Right.
You know, so much is going to change between now and then.
Yes.
I do remember a couple years ago when a guy named Daquan Bowers was clearly, on December 18th, the number one player in the draft. Everybody was talking about getting Daquan Bowers. Well, guess what? He ended up hurting his knee, had surgery, ended up falling to the second round. He's a Buccaneer, and he's on his way out of the league if he doesn't straighten up real soon. So, you know, you're right. It's a complete crapshoot. There's no guarantees whatsoever, and it's why I think GM's draft record, I think it's ridiculously overrated. I don't think it's as much about who you draft.
I think rather they look, Roy, at the number one or two picks. Look at 3, 4, and 5.
Yes.
3, 4, and 5 are the ones that are going to tell you whether you understand the draft or not.
Yeah.
But you know, look at 5 years out, not next year or the following year. Look at it 5 years out and see who's still around and who has produced over those 5 years.
Look, everybody knows that when you get to rounds 5, 6, and 7, particularly 6 and 7, but 5, 2, you're looking for special teams contributors. You're not looking for starting caliber players. So when people look at drafts, look back 3 years, 4, 5 years later at a draft and say, oh, that guy didn't make it, and you know, because he's nothing but a special teams contributor. Look, that's not missing. That's what you drafted that guy to do. That's what you're picking when you're picking it, you know, at number 180 and 212 in the draft. You're picking special teams guys that you hope can just, you know, help you prevent a kick return. You know, that's all you're doing.
Depth players.
Gentlemen. Hate to interrupt right now. We got a special guest on. He's had a short amount of time. Mike Schulze from the Outback Ball. Mike, you're talking to Roy Cummings, Leo Haggerty, Roger Handler, and Don Henderson and Frank. And, well, that's going to be a great game on January 1st, Mike. And we know we guys surely would love to have you on for a couple minutes.
Well, it sounds like a rough crowd. But it's great to be with you guys.
We're soft. Roy's tough. We're soft.
Hey, Roy, how'd you get involved with these guys?
Just like you. Somehow they found me.
Well, yeah, we're pumped up, man. Hey, 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today, we will be playing a game in Raymond James Stadium. We are really excited, and I know the teams are as well. They're making their final plans to get down here and get in some warm weather. So we're excited.
So, see, I heard there's some talk recently about. I know some people have wondered why Texas A&M didn't get an Outback Bowl invitation, or maybe they got an invitation, but why they didn't end up here. And I heard that the SEC wanted Texas A&M in Atlanta rather than in Tampa. Does that jive with what you've heard as well? That really was out of your hands?
No, we first of all, LSU beat A&M a couple weeks left in the season, and beat them, you know, pretty convincingly. And and they had a better record in ranking than A&M. So I'm not really sure what the question is there. I think we took the most deserving team there, and we're very excited about having LSU in our game. They haven't been here in 25 years. We haven't had very many opportunities in that time span to get them. And so we thought this was a terrific time to bring him back to our game.
Yeah, well, that all makes sense, and I see your point. I guess the question is, it just seems like Texas A&M right now is kind of the sexier team with Johnny Manziel, and you've got a chance to bring that guy in, and obviously that's going to get great ratings and stuff. And that's where the questions have come from, I think.
Well, we're extremely happy to have LSU in our game. Like I said, I mean, they haven't been here a long time. They're a really quality team. Hell, they're the only team that's beaten Auburn this year. So, you know, again, I mean, we're very, very excited about LSU in our game. And
well,
I'll
tell you, Les Miles is
going to
give you a little traction, too.
He really did a great job down the stretch.
Hey, Mike, are there specific rules you have to follow when you're taking a team? Like they say, you know, you get the third pick with the SEC and the third pick with the Big Ten. Can you go down to five or six, or are there certain rules you have to follow?
Well, you know, there are some aspects to it, obviously, but for in general, I mean, it's your pick. You get to pick. There are certain times where there's parameters where you can't take a team that's got, you know, you can't take a 7-win team over a 10-win team. You know, for instance, I mean, or something like that, which would be sort of ridiculous, and it would be ridiculous anyways. But for the most part, when it's your pick, it's your pick. And we put, you know, we take the teams that we think are going to be the best teams for our game in that given year. And, you know, a lot of things go into this, as we've talked about before. So, like I said, right now we're focused on LSU and Iowa. And I think it's going to be a really good game. I mean, LSU is one of the top offenses in the SEC, which is nothing to sneeze about, of course. And likewise, Iowa has the seventh ranked defense in the country, and has you know, a core. They got three linebackers who each have over 95 tackles this year.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so they've got some really good. In fact, they got a lineman that was just named second team All American. So They've got some really good players. I mean, you know, they don't always get as much respect as you know, by certain teams as or fan bases, I should say, as you know, some of the names that have been around for, you know, up in the top tier for the last 100 years. But I'll guarantee you that they will come ready to play. And Coach Behrens is a quality coach. Has been there for 15 years, which is not, you know, it's a rarity this time. You know, these days, but he's, you know, been there that long for a reason, because he's produced some really good programs and a lot of really good players out of that program as well, including a number who are in the NFL. So LSU is going to have their hands full in that regard. And I remember when Iowa came in here, arched in here about 10 years ago and played Florida, and I remember the Florida fans just not really thinking it was going to be a walk in the park. And when they went home after losing by about 20 points, they had, you know, new respect for what, you know, programs like Iowa can do. And so, like I said, I think that this is going to be a really good matchup.
My
hey,
boy,
here's the continuity stuff.
This would be great for Iowa, afford notoriety, you know, because like you were alluding to, they don't get the notoriety that a lot of the SEC and some of the other Big Ten mm-hmm. schools get. And, you know, the fan base, like you said, they're probably, like, elated to come down to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are, first of all, because it's probably about -3 degrees there right now. their biggest problem getting out of the state is whether they can start the car or not, you know. Cause
yeah. That's true.
Right.
Oh,
but really, I mean, they you know, it goes back to what you were saying, though. I mean, these bowl games give teams like that an opportunity to gain that respect, if you will, that from people that maybe don't always give them that respect. And I was a great example of that. As I mentioned, they came in here, they beat Florida one time when they played them. They played them a second time in our game, actually, and lost by 7 points largely on a controversial offsides call on an onside kick that they recovered towards the end of the game, which could have put them in a position to potentially tie the game and potentially win it.
Roy, don't talk about it. Don't talk about an official, because we have the number one official evaluator right here on the program.
That's right.
Well,
don't get me started about that.
Okay, but here. Well, if I can finish that, the last time they were here, they played at South Carolina, and beat the snot out of them, frankly. So, and the last time that the only other time that Iowa's ever played LSU was in the Capital One Bowl back in probably 2006 or something like that, and they beat them on the last play of the game. So, you know, again, you know, what does Iowa do when they get a chance to play, you know, SEC teams? Well, you know, quite often they beat them. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, so anybody sitting there thinking that, you know, this is going to be a mismatch, I think has a surprise coming.
Mike, how's the ticket situation for the ball game? You guys sold out yet pretty much? And how can fans, you know, listen to this program?
We're not sold out, but we're selling them each day, and there
Good.
Are seats available still, and people can buy tickets through Ticketmaster.com. Or, of course, in the state of Florida, you can actually still go to the Ticketmaster outlets if you'd like to. But they are on sale through Ticketmaster, and we are selling them every day. And we're anticipating, like I said, a great game, great weather. We got a lot of fun events leading up to the game, so encourage everybody who's a college football fan to come out and enjoy the New Year's Day College Bowl game experience. It's really something special, as we've talked about before. And it's a sight to behold. And even if you don't have to have been a alumnus of Iowa or LSU to enjoy a game like this, you know, just being a college football fan, you're going to have a great time.
Looking forward to a great game, and also looking forward to seeing Les Miles down here. I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun by itself.
Bring the hat down here.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I mentioned it last week. I was traveling, and I was on a plane, and a player that had played in the Outback Bowl had his championship ring on. And I want to tell you, that was the topic of conversation with all the flight attendants. So you were getting a lot of notoriety on an AirTran flight last week.
Those things are, you know, those things are special, these guys. I mean, you talk to even some of the, you know, the coaches, you know, been around the game for decades and decades. I mean, they can still go back and tell you, you know, each of the bowl games they attended, you know, that they played in, and they usually, you know, most of them will have like their ring or whatever they have, or a watch or something from those games, and they can recall pretty much everything that happened in those games. I mean, those are special games, not only for the kids that, you know, play in the pros even. Because it's a different kind of experience, but certainly for all the players who never make it to the pros, which is most of them, that's typically the highlight of their football playing career, even, you know, surpassing obviously high school and all that. So it's a great opportunity for these guys to do something that they'll remember the rest of their lives.
Like, I can't wait for a halftime show, because I get to see the college bands go out there, and the kids do a great job. And the halftime show especially, I mean, I'm looking forward to that already, because, because like the college, those kids, these kids go, you know, so much emphasis on making that trip down here for the marching band. I mean, remember when Ohio State came down here a couple years, several years ago, they had a media guide. I read that media guide, Mike. You probably know that, but everybody. They have to try out for each spot every week up there.
I think the band's media guy was bigger than the football team's media guy.
Dot the I, right?
Hey, these guys, I just heard today LSU's band's going to be practicing at they got practice at 6 a.m. on game day.
Oh, you're kidding me!
You think the bands don't take this?
I'm saying you put the Ohio State band on the field, you better get a bigger field.
That's right.
Hey, and don't let Tommy fool you. He's there for the steak on the Barbie at halftime.
No, come on. I'm there for the halftime show in the football game.
Hey,
Mike knows better than that, right?
Mike, if you take the last four bowl years, you can arguably say that the Outback Bowl's last four games have been the best bowl games anyone. You don't expect that to change this year, do you?
Well, I hope not. You know, it's hard to say. But, you know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, I think part of that, and of course not all of it, but part of it is, you know, we've all seen bowl games where teams go to games that, you know, they were really hoping to do something different, or they're not real excited about the team that they're going to be playing against for whatever reason. We've seen that, you know, even last year in some games. And they don't go out and really perform the way you would expect them to. But when you have teams that are playing in a bowl game against an opponent that they really respect and playing in a bowl game that they really wanted to be in, then I think that it just brings their game, you know, to another level. And I think that's what's happened the last few years. I mean, we've had teams that have, you know, we've had, you know, Florida playing against Penn State, you know, in Urban Meyer's last game as the Gator coach. And at the time, you know, a lot of people felt like that was probably going to be Joe Paterno's last bowl game, though, you know, we didn't understand why it would be that way, but as it turned out, it was. But you know, we had, you know, Georgia and Michigan State, you know, playing, you know, both runners up of the Big Ten and the SEC that year, with a lot to prove. You know, we had Michigan and South Carolina playing last year. You know, Michigan, you know, back on the rise. You know, turn the program back around. You know, with a good future ahead, and South Carolina being able to play Michigan that they, like they had ever played before. And Coach Spurrier had never in his whole coaching career coached against the University of Michigan. So that was a special thing for him. So my point is, I guess, is that when you have teams that are, you know, put together in these kind of situations, and they really, really want to be there and are excited about the opportunity to go out and play this game, I think that they're just naturally going to perform at their top level. And when you get the teams that we get in this game each year that are doing that, then it's usually going to be a really good game. And so, hopefully that's going to be the case again this year.
You know, like
the Michigan State game was triple overtime. You couldn't ask for anything more than that 2 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think like I said, it's just so much about the perspective of the teams when they're coming into this game, and I think this is one of the most respected bowl games in the country. You know, certainly, you know, Big Ten, SEC, that bragging rights, you know, is a really big deal for both of those conferences. You know, they're representing their conference when they're playing in this game in a bigger way than just representing that particular team in that given year. So I think they bring it, basically, and put the chin straps on and are ready to play when they come out of those tunnels. You know, they're not just here saying, well, this is just a bowl game that, you know, that we're playing in because, you know, we had to go somewhere and this is where we ended up kind of thing, you know, and we're just going to play it out. I mean, they're here ready to play this game, and they're serious about it, and that usually produces some really good games.
And you know what, guys, when you look at film, there's a real big motivating factor, and that's the guy on the other side of the line with a different color jersey. He's good enough to embarrass you, and there's nothing worse than on a bowl game getting beat 52-7.
Yes.
Believe me, that's why you come show up ready to play. And, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, ESPN has this the seventh best bowl game in the country? And that's not a bad deal behind the BCS game and the four majors.
Yeah, I you know, they rate it pretty highly. I know last year they rated our game one of the best games going in as well. So and it proved out that way, certainly. So we'll see how it goes. You never know how that ball bounces. You know, it's got,
well,
you chatted about that earlier when we
talked to you about the dedication to ESPN, you know, and the Outback Bowl. Hell, they were one of the first ones, as you indicated, to make that commitment, and it's really held true for a long time.
Yeah, we were one of the first bowl games to go on ESPN back when in the earlier days of ESPN, and when they really wanted to make a statement and get into college football in a big, big way. And they did that in part by securing some key bowl games. And, you know, us being the New Year's Day bowl game back at that point, for them to be able to latch onto that, that was a real important thing, you know, in the growth of or what they were looking to do for the future for the network. And it's been a great marriage together. We've actually been with them now for 21 years.
Wow.
We've been a New Year's Day bowl game for – this is our 26th year as a New Year's Day bowl game, 28th year overall. And our 19th year with Outback Steakhouse as our title sponsor, the longest title sponsor of any bowl game in the country. So we've built some great relationships. They've been great marriages, and all those agreements and conference agreements, everything are in place for six more years after next week. So
nice.
So we're in good
great.
Shape moving forward, and we're very excited about the future.
Well,
and
that's
especially
that's consistency.
The next 2 weeks, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This can be fun.
Well,
the next
guys,
2 weeks.
I've got to run. I've got I got some more stuff I got to do here in the office, grinding away here. So we're, appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys.
Merry Christmas.
Have a terrific holiday, and we'll all look forward to seeing you on New Year's Day at that bowl game.
Merry Christmas,
Mike. Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you guys.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Mike.
Thanks, Chris, for coming on. Merry Christmas, Mike. Wow.
And you know that Don Henderson is the happiest guy in the world that they moved this game to 1 o'clock, because to grab his old bones out of that bed for a 9 o'clock game.
Oh,
wasn't
no.
happening, was it, Don?
Let me tell you, I'm up at 10:30 regardless of what the weather is.
That's right. 7:30, Don, 7:30. But I know Leo's the happiest guy because that bowl has the best media food in all
yeah,
of the
that's
USA.
Right.
Hey, I'll tell you what, fellas, the Bloomin' Onion at kickoff, you can't beat it.
Roger, let me tell you one thing. They got two people dedicated to the game, and they got two people dedicated to the food line.
we're just
trying to figure out who it is.
you don't have to look too far.
I think I knew it when it is, Don.
Believe me, guys, at the link Saturday, I didn't have to look too far either. It was snow and sleet and rain and snow and sleet.
Boy, that was terrible, wasn't it? It was really, you felt sorry. I mean, by the time you got to the fourth quarter, there was nobody there except the cadets.
Oh, seriously, it was crazy. We're looking around going, you know, you'd have to call out for a riot. It was crazy.
Leo, it's still one of the great events in this country.
Hey, it's a bucket list, and anybody that tells you different has no idea what's going
right.
on.
Right.
We went down there. We had credentials for six of us. We had two camera people, myself, Ken Podolak, Al Curtis, and Mike Simsack were up there, our Army guy, our Navy guy, and our Philly guy. So we had a great time, but I tell you what, guys, it's definitely a bucket list. When both academies march on at the end, when they sing the alma mater and that, and
right.
it's tremendous. But I'll tell you what, Army fired its coach Monday, and a friend of mine is a West Point grad, and he got a letter from the commandant on Tuesday apologizing for the coach. I've never heard of that before.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Leo, if they were playing this week, it would have been 55 to 60 degrees. It's a shame. We got two weekends in a row on national TV, won the Army-Navy game and won the Eagles game. And two of the worst days in December in a long, long time on the Eastern Seaboard. You were there Saturday this week, and we were there Sunday 2 weeks ago. And I'm telling you, the weather was just absolutely brutal.
Oh. And you know what, Don? The worst thing is, if you flip flop, if the Eagles would have played Saturday and the Army Navy would have played Sunday, it would have been no problem. That's how funny that weather system was up there.
You're right. You're exactly right.
Leo, did you say the Army coach was fired on Monday?
Yes, Monday morning.
Unbelievable.
And I'll give you the scoop, guys. The person in the running to get that job is the Bucs offensive coordinator.
Mike Sullivan?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Is he going to take it?
You know what? We didn't have a chance to ask Roy this, but when you do go at worst 4-12 or 6-10, Don, would you agree with me? Somebody's got to fall on their sword?
No question. And the funny thing is, in the Army-Navy game, I mean, you're talking about Army not winning since, what, 2001? Is that the last
years.
Year?
Yeah, 12 straight losses.
Yeah. I mean, you can lose all your other games, but you can't lose 12 straight times the Navy, or you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you lost five straight the Navy. You get 5 years to build a program, and you know it's funny. We sit here and we talk about this, but you know what we should do on next week's program is pick the six coaches that are going to get fired in the NFL. But every year there's a minimum of 6 to 8 that get fired.
Wow.
And it's amazing how, you know, you look around and go, whoa. And, Don, are you a member of the Maxwell Club, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, I am too, Leo.
Did you do your voting today for the Coach of the Year and Player of the Year?
Yes, I did. I'll tell you, I've been a member of the Maxwell Club since, probably 30-some years.
Wow.
Back to the 60s, right, Don?
Yeah. Late 50s, early 60s was when I first started to go. Remember when Russo was the PR guy?
Bob Russo.
He was a teacher out by Willow Grove Airport. I forget what the name of that school was.
He was at Horsham.
Yeah, he was a school teacher out there, and we were good friends, and, of course, Red Spagnuolo was at that particular time, nobody on that we're talking to now even knows who Red Spagnuolo is, but he was the president of the Maxwell Club, and that's when I first went in.
And you know what, guys? I thought the Coach of the Year was a lock. I mean, it has to be Andy Reid, don't you think?
Well, everybody else thinks so. I can't
there's
gotta
people
be right
that
there.
Think that Chip Kelly.
I had Chip Kelly. I'll be honest with you. I went Andy Reid, Ron Rivera, Chip Kelly. Andy turned a 3-13 team around. Chip Kelly's in the process of turning a 3-13 team around. And Ron Rivera is the same thing. What were they, 4-12?
Right.
So,
Bruce Arians. I think he's a candidate with what he's done this year, 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Well, 1 year, 9-4, right? 9-5 right now, thereabouts.
That's who I voted for.
Who'd you vote for, Don? I missed it.
Bruce Arians.
Let me just say one thing about this Army-Navy, okay? I had 24 years in the Navy. My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather were all retired Army colonels. And I can tell you from a recruiting standpoint, there's a big difference from recruiting somebody that's going to be out in the trenches versus someone that's going to be in an airplane or on a ship. And from personal experience, my father was not happy when I went in the Navy. And I was on active duty, and he and I were going someplace, and he said to me, "You made the right decision." And I said to him, "You never told me I made the right decision about anything." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "You made the right decision about the branch of service, because you know where you're going to be sleeping at night, and you know you're going to get 3 meals a day."
Interesting thing apart about that, Roger, is that the Air Force Academy and Naval Academy have been able to recruit much better than West Point has. And, as you say, that has something to do with it. But at the same time, Navy went for years, would go to a bowl game. Army would never go. You know, there were a lot of things.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of things that they did administratively that, to me, I think hurt the program.
Well, listen, Don, who was the coach of the former coach of the San Diego Chargers? And
Bobby Ross.
And look,
mm-hmm.
he brought him in. Now, there's a guy that's kids went to the military academies, and he had an understanding, and he couldn't turn it around.
Wow, that's right.
He was a championship coach.
And you know what, guys? I'm looking at the game, and I don't know if you noticed this, but Navy's nose guard was 303 pounds.
Right.
Ooh,
okay?
That's right.
I don't think Army had anybody over 260.
Right.
And you know, I asked Mike, Tommy, you met Mike Simsek, you know, our Army guy who loves it there.
Sure.
He's former Special Forces. And I said, Mike, why didn't that 303-pound guy go there? He said, because every year you have to do a PT test, and you've got to run 2 miles in under 15 minutes. He said, I don't think he's going to make it.
Well, just remember one thing, that when Wade Harden was at Navy, look at the players that he got at Navy.
Right.
And you look at the basketball program, and you weren't supposed to be any bigger than, 6'2" or whatever it was. Robinson was
6'11".
They finally had to let him out of the Navy because he was too big.
Well, you know,
they have different recruiting policies there.
He went in at 6'6", and then he grew. You know,
right.
Well,
you know what?
Naval Academy.
Yeah.
You can't throw somebody out for growing, you know, and that's what happened with him.
Yeah, he didn't grow that much.
But
you know what was it? He was 6'8", wasn't he, when he played in the NBA?
I think he's more like 9 or 10.
David Robinson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he 7 foot?
He's 7 foot. But what happened is guys, and you remember old Corky Calhoun when he came to Penn as a 6 foot point guard and grew to 6'7" before his freshman year?
Right. I worked with Corky for years at Mobile Oil.
Yeah. And
a friend of mine.
Hey, here's the funny part. David Robinson came into the Naval Academy at 6'1.5".
Right.
Grew to 7 foot. Guess what his branch of the Naval Academy service he was in, of all things?
What's that?
Submarines.
I remember that now, right.
He couldn't fit in the submarine if they cut it in half.
Well, you know, hey, Bob, let me say something about that. Rita's late husband, Mike's cousin's son, is at Villanova, and he's on an NROTC. He's graduating, and he's gone on a sub, and he's been on a sub in Australia. And he's like 6'2".
Oh, my
so,
God.
I mean, you know, height today, it's a lot different than it was when we were growing up in the service. Let me tell you.
Oh, no question. What's the score of the St. Joe game? I'm not, and everywhere I can see a TV set. Drexel, St. Joe, what do they got? You been watching it, Roger?
What's it all about? ESPN?
No, SNY. SNY.
Oh, it's got SNY. Okay, hold on 1 minute.
Yeah,
we
can't
got a
get
partial
into...
score. Partial score is in Donnie. Drexel 8.
Uh-oh.
Hey,
Mom, never
one minute. Let me get it.
It's Drexel grad.
Yeah, right. Can we
start flapping the wings now?
Tommy, can I change gears for 1 second?
Sure. Whatever you want to do.
I don't know if you talked about the new rule in baseball about not being able to run over the catcher.
No, we talked about that the other day, remember? Okay.
Well, thank God that baseball's come up with that.
Yes.
I can't believe I'm listening to people say, gee, it's an exciting part of the game. It should be. You know, you can't run over the first baseman, the second baseman, the third baseman. Why should you be able to run over the catcher? Also,
Great point.
Well, Leo, you got to say one thing. That Tim McCarver has been, he's been putting that forth on every national game that he's done over the last 3 years.
Yep.
He's talked about you give the runner space to come in, but you can't jump in front of him and block the plate without the ball.
Correct.
And you can't run over the catcher. Now, I think that's one of the best new rules they've come up with.
Absolutely.
Amen, because remember what happened to Pete Rose and Ray Fossey. I mean, that's an all-star game. I always talk to Ray Fossey when he comes in up there, and I says, Oh, but they got to change that rule now because he's still hurting from that Pete Rose incident.
Yeah.
They look at Buster Posey for San Francisco.
No, and he took him 30 years to change it, Tommy.
62-49, St. Joe's up over Drexel, 5:21 remaining in the second half.
Thank
you for that.
Go Hawks.
Everybody keeps saying that it's going to be hard to police. This is the easiest rule to police. If the catcher is blocking the plate at any time, it's interference. The run scores. If the runner runs the catcher over, it's obstruction. You know, and he's out. It's simple. And dear God, they had 18 concussions last year. 10 of them were catchers.
The only tough part about it is, and I agree with the rule, as I said, I think it's the best rule they've made in years in baseball. But
absolutely,
the one thing that is going to make it a little bit more difficult is the fact that the catcher's mitt, they have a tough – you usually have to put the other hand on top of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to be able to do that. You're going to have to make a one-hand swipe like Jorge Posada always made. Jorge Posada never blocked the plate. You're going to have to make that kind of tag at home plate. And there is a chance that you're going to lose the ball. But that's the only negative that I can think of.
Or you can straddle the plate. You just don't block the plate. You catch the ball and you put a foot on each side of the plate and say, okay, pal, slide.
Yeah,
I'm ready
but
for
you're still going to get wiped out by doing that. One of your knees is going to get wiped out. You can't do that. You're either going to have to get behind the plate or in front of the plate. You're not going to be able to get straddle the plate or you're going to lose a knee.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
Boy, guys, aren't we back to the football thing now? You know, instead of hitting guys in the head, you're hitting them in the knee, and look what's happening.
Yeah.
Great point, Leo. We just had this discussion that a couple weeks ago, because these guys wear no knee pads, and these guys are going after the knees. These guys wear knee pads, slow them down, their knees will be healthy right now. But they're going
after
the knees.
Yeah, but you can't hit anybody below the knees or above the shoulder pads anymore, says Tommy.
Oh.
So the knee pads don't make any difference.
No, it's not football right now. Look, could you imagine Jack Tatum trying to play in this league right now? He'd be thrown out every game.
Hey, Tommy, you and I were sitting having lunch at Raymond James, and I asked John Lynch, John, could you play under these rules right now? And he said, absolutely not.
Yep.
The thing is,
there's too much responsibility on the officials to police this because – you know, there's a lot of difference of opinion about what is a penalty and what isn't a penalty. I think that's got to really be discussed during the off season as to how they officiate these games because right now there's just no consistency. We talk about consistency and everything, and in officiating right now there's no consistency.
And you know what, guys? Here's
the
whole thing. They talk about a defenseless receiver. I understand that. But if the quarterback throws it 3 feet over his head, he's got to jump in the air, who made him defenseless?
The quarterback, for God's sake.
And you know what? This game goes so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you see the play the other night with Detroit when Johnson got hit from three sides? Unbelievable. You think he's got to be 4 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
Catches the ball and hit by three different people at the same time. I mean, now, there's no way that you could protect him against that.
No, right. it's impossible.
Well, remember when Mark Duper got whirlyburged?
Yeah.
In the Jets game?
Right.
They probably ejected that guy. I mean, that's crazy. But hey, fellas, how about this for a trivia question?
Uh-oh.
Who's the only team to be beaten twice by field goals over 60 yards?
Detroit.
Detroit.
They were knocked off by Dempsey. They were knocked off by Dempsey, and then of course game Monday night.
Great trivia question.
Isn't that amazing? 260-plus yards.
Yeah, that field goal the other night was only 1 yard short of Dempsey's, wasn't it?
Yeah,
62 yards, right?
Yeah, and those ones in Denver should have an asterisk after them.
With that tailwind, but you remember 1968 Tiger Stadium Thanksgiving Day? What did Sam Baker do? He beat the Lions with four field goals.
Yeah. Yeah. And he cost the Eagles a big draft choice, too.
Well, you know,
they got Leroy Keyes instead of O.J. Simpson.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember when you know, the Falcons and the Redskins, as you know, Mike Shanahan went for 2 points at the end to win. And I thought he might do that, and I said that to the fellow that sits next to me, William Pease. But when you think about it, I said, why not? Because neither team is going anyplace, and the only difference is it may make a difference in one spot, you know, for the draft.
Right, okay? Yeah. Great
and,
point.
And he said that he did. He ran down the sidelines. He looked right at the line of scrimmage. Shanahan did to see whether the defense was what they thought it would be, and he went for it. And I give him a lot of credit, and I mentioned – the only time that I disagreed with going for that with circumstances like that was when, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Jerry Burke at Temple when he went for the 2 point to beat Penn State instead of going for the tie. And,
right.
and I would have gone for the tie only because Temple came from way back, right, Don, in that game to tie it up and then to go to overtime. That would have been a real feather in their cap for the Owls.
And that was before the playoffs and the ties, too.
That's right.
That game would have ended in a tie.
In a tie, exactly. But that would have been like a win for Temple against Penn State.
Right.
Oh, definitely. We made their season, Roger, when you think about
exactly,
it.
Exactly, Tommy. You're exactly
they would have
right.
caught up. They got the tie instead of going. Cut the tie. Never can happen in a kickoff. Get it to overtime. Never can happen up there because, you know, it's the same thing here with South Florida. You go up to Rutgers and lose that game up there and that. But
hey,
like,
you know,
Mike
let
was,
me interrupt you there, Tommy,
yes,
because I talked to Chet today over at Temple. And they're going to play South Florida in March. And I said, well,
ooh,
we'll all be there for that game. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and they also play in Orlando the first part of January. So I said, well, I don't know if I can make it over to Orlando, but I said, we'll definitely be, you know, there for the South Florida game.
That's right. I have to wear my Temple outfit. So let's go, Temple.
Well, I'll tell you, those folks, Tommy, and Frank and Don and Leo, they are destroying the Dragons now.
All right. The Hawk will never die.
The Dragons.
Well, I tell you, we got to talk about Villanova a little bit, boys. They're 10-0.
Looking good.
Yeah, they're looking very good.
And guess who Villanova plays Saturday? The Ryder Bronx.
Oh, boy. Well, they played LaSalle last Saturday, and they've destroyed LaSalle. They beat them by about 15 points.
Gentlemen, we hate to break this great conversation up. Frank said tick-tock.
Okay.
And
no
pick
this week, I guess. Who won last week, Tommy? You didn't make any announcement.
Oh, Don, you won last week.
Oh, is that right?
He liked him better than us.
Yeah. He won last week.
Congratulations to Mr. Henderson.
Well, once again, fellas, congratulations on another year, and great to be with you, and happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same
Merry
you,
Christmas,
Tommy.
Happy New
Merry
Year.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
God bless. Have a great couple of weeks. Enjoy the Outback Bowl. Wish I was there.
Oh, I wish you were there,
we
too,
wish
Roger.
You were there, too, Roger. We'd learn something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about football.
Tommy, I hope I see you Sunday night.
Just down at DoubleTree, right?
No, at the house. Night before.
Oh, okay, definitely. Call me, get directions, so I know how to get there. So
I put the
You'll be able to watch the Eagles game at home this week, Tommy, because it's on NBC.
I know. Watch it at Leo's house. What better way to do it?
Mr.
Will be there Frank, for once
Mr.
again, the best wishes to you and your family.
Thank you, Roger. Same to you and your wife.
Thank you. God bless.
All right, guys. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I hope the Pussycat gets a little bit of Friskies.
What a way to end up. Thank you. I'd like to thank Mike Schultz from the Outback Bowl, Roy Cummings from the Tampa Tribune. I'd like to thank Leo Haggerty from Night Sports Production, Don Henderson, our legend in Philadelphia, Roger Handler in Atlanta. Most of all, Frank, a job, a year. Well done, sir.
That's fair. We had a great time, Donnie.
I appreciate everything
you guys have done to keep this thing alive and keep Block Talk going for Bobby.
Anything for Bobby. He was a he's a great person up there. And he's looking down at us. Frank says, way to go, and go Notre Dame in a pinstripe bowl. That's what he's probably
right.
saying right now. Oh, I'd like to thank Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania, Prissy Water, log on for bradfordwhite.com. Tim Baker, he didn't call us, but you call him 352 over the holidays, 588-5454. Give Tom a call at the Abbey Course, 352-588-2016. Lightning saw him tomorrow night, 7:30 face-off versus Nashville. They're home over the Christmas holidays. It's going to be Saturday night versus Carolina. In the Christmas week, the 28th, they're home versus Montreal. Sunday night, home versus the Rangers. Call 813-301-6600. Frank, from my family to your family, Merry, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I'll see you on January 1st at the Rage. God bless
yes,
everybody
sir.
Out
same
there.
Coming.
Thank you, Frank.
You
bye-bye now.
Ladies
Thank
and gentlemen,
you.
These programs are brought to you each and every night. Grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see someone in a uniform, please just walk up, shake their hand, tell them thank you. It means the world to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to members who've lost their lives. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkap, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Reed Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofa Crispin, who's today is the first anniversary of his death. The Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office. Chief Al Hogel, Bongo Key Police Department. Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol. Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Uniform Division. Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department. MIT Officer Sean Collier. And Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Now, my brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, until that time, until we meet again at the table of the Lord, may the Lord, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your field and the sunshine on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. And ladies and gentlemen, please have a very safe and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Shema ezahir ma son ashen vorat fet hakuig again ma ma Shema lek ma yilama Shema ezahir ma Shene vorat fet hakuig again ma yirma Shema lek ma yilama Shema yeza yirma Shuna shene vorat fet hakuig again ma yirma Grief and pain are all I know
County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised. 1999's responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Good night, Bob. We miss you. Good night, Frankie. I love you.
Thanks.